Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is We Have Communicators, episode 151, recorded on February 29th, 2012. Enjoy! All right, it's time for We Have Communicators, the show that covers all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
Yeah?
You know, just got those first world problems we were talking about. I can't figure out PHP global variable scope, so anybody knows anything about that, email me.
Yeah, do that. Jeff Gamet's also here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how's it going?
It's going good. And I was going to ask you what it is that's beyond when you say we talk about everything iOS and beyond, and then Adam just showed me. We talk about PHP global variables.
No,
so now I know.
I would say that beyond is just something that I say to cover myself when we start talking about Apple TV and OS X and anything else that isn't directly iOS.
Yeah.
That's fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean we can talk about like Doctor Who and girls?
Well, we already do that, right?
Space.
Yeah, that's beyond. That's all beyond the scope
spaces,
of iOS.
Space is for sure beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you look out and there it is, beyond.
Oh, well, you know, I suddenly like this podcast a lot more.
Cool. So, Apple sent out invitations for their iPad 3 media event.
Wait,
you know what the best part of that is?
Okay, well, it's an iPad event. It's an iPad event.
Did it say iPad in the invitation?
It does. It shows someone touching an iPad. It could be a very large iPhone.
You assume that's an iPad.
It could be a very small hand.
How do you know it's an iPad?
I don't. It could be something else. It's something...
I'm just joking. I'm just playing
something
like I'm playing the general internets of let's read everything into this invite that isn't... anything but invite saying we're having a special event.
So what is the internet reading into it? What the invite says is...
Sorry, I cut off Jeff. Jeff was going to say something cool. Let's let him say that.
All right, the best part about the invite was that about half an hour before it went out, CNBC thought they scooped everyone because they had an inside source that told them that Apple was going to be announcing the iPad 3 on March 7th at a special event in New York City.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of awesome.
Yeah.
An hour later, they're wrong.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I think I kind of did a not nice tweet to them too about that.
That's you
fine.
Too?
I did.
They probably deserved it.
You might want to double check those sources.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think my tweet was something about, I bet CNBC feels awesome about scooping everyone on the iPad 3 media event in New York City. Oh, wait.
Mm-hmm. So the invite says that they have it says, we have something you really need have to see and touch.
Porno. Apple is starting their own porno channel.
It could be that. Or it could have something to do with the photo of someone touching what seems to be an iPad. Has anybody done any...
I think it would be awesome if they came, I want to welcome everybody here, and we have something great for you to touch. Here's Phil Schiller. Enjoy.
Here's
no,
Phil
everyone,
Schiller.
You have to touch him. If people come out with guns, don't touch him. You die.
Oh, my God.
And then you really have to think about it. I mean, which is worse, dying or touching Phil Schiller?
Aw, he seems cuddly. I wouldn't.
He probably is, but I'm assuming that he's dressed in a completely inappropriate way for this event just to make touching him that much more uncomfortable for people.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
So has anybody done any sort of dubious analysis of the pixel density of what seems to be in this photo?
Actually, the better question would be how many of us haven't bothered to do that?
Oh, that'd be me. I haven't done that.
So there's three of us that have not bothered to try and overanalyze that photo.
It happens magically to me. So I'm like looking at the thing, right? And the immediate thing I notice is, hey, there's no home button.
Right.
And then I realized, wait, it's just in landscape mode.
It's in landscape mode.
But my brain went to the, you know, immediately to, oh, there's something hidden in here. And then I'm like, stop that. Don't do that. That's dumb.
It is dumb.
But your brain wants to.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay. So leading up to this event, or for the invitation going out, and it went out yesterday. Leading up to that, we've seen a lot of parts leaking out and various rumors about it. Regarding the back casing, it's going to be essentially the same. However, all the parts that we've seen from various places, they've been going around. The edges are going to be a little bit more tapered. It's going to be a gradual slope, slightly more gradual than the current iPad 2. And
well, that's to hide the extra weight, right, that it put on over the summer.
Yeah.
No, that's why they put it in a blouse with stripes.
Right, yeah.
No, I mean, the general consensus is that's because it's supposed to be a little bit thicker.
Yeah, it's going to be just slightly thicker. Like, how many millimeters thicker?
Speaking of people doing the deep analysis, supposedly, where did I read this? One of the sites took the photo that's in the invite and supposedly did some sort of analysis and somehow magically determined that it's 0.81 millimeters thicker.
Someone did that from the photo.
Oh, sweet
from
Mary,
the invite?
Mother of God. People, really?
Or maybe it was from one of the back case photos. Could be from that too. But from some photo. And I don't know how you do that.
Okay, so what happened with that?
How do you know how far they are from the thing and what angle and how you do that, I don't know. Maybe there's magic elves.
Can I get workman's comp for this podcast? Because I think I just hyperextended my retinas, rolling my eyes back in my head.
No, you need workman's comp from the Apple community. But
the rumors have said between 0.07 millimeters and 1.1 millimeters.
I thought it was 0.8 millimeters thicker. They took a...
Maybe I'm getting my decimals off.
They use a digital caliper.
Just under one, supposedly.
To actually measure. They had both cases. They measured the thickness of both cases. So I think that ignores the screen, whatever thickness the screen adds, if it adds any, because I don't think there was a screen.
The screen's actually supposed to be thinner because of the glass, right? The Gorilla Glass is like 20% thinner than it was before.
Possibly. Not sure. But I think what's more interesting is the fact that the camera hole is bigger on the back, significantly bigger. And according to Apple Daily, they say that it's going to be 8 megapixels up from the 1 megapixel we have right now, which would be a significant, crazy significant upgrade.
Right. So now you can take really high quality photos like while you look like a total bonehead holding your iPad out in front of you.
I do. Yeah. It's interesting. I still like the rumor that at one point said that there'll be enough horsepower in the iPad 3 to bring out a touch version of like Final Cut, and that the upgraded camera would be so you could take better quality video.
Yeah, well, they say that
Final Cut on the iPad, but it still seems silly to be shooting with the iPad. You know, shoot with a camera or your iPhone.
But they do say that you'd be able to take 1080p video. That's the rumor.
Yeah, but why? Why? I guess it's good in a pinch, and it's great that you would have that. But and people will do all those cool things where we see people with iPad 3s, you know, shooting and editing 1080p, you know, 5-minute short video or something like that. But beyond
walking
that,
off of ledges.
But beyond being kitschy and cool for about 5 minutes, after that, you know, most people are going to use a good camera to shoot the video and edit the way they always had. So it's fun and cool, and being a geek, I love that kind of stuff. But practical wise, it's just, you know, it's just an evolution. You got to have better cameras, and competitors have better cameras, and if they can fit one in and make it work, I think they do. And that's cool, but that's not the feature I'm excited about.
It's definitely good for communicating. why did I say it like that way? Communicating. Like, you know,
no, sending, let's all start saying it communicating
okay,
now.
Okay, we can say communicating. Communicators. We have communicators.
Yeah. I mean with FaceTime HD and better cameras, and now you got FaceTime on the desktop and FaceTime on iPads, and you want to show somebody, hey, look, I'm at the Grand Canyon or whatever.
Yeah, here's, you can, really cool. I mean, video. You're talking FaceTime, you're talking Facebook, you're talking Twitter and all that other stuff, because if you do have your iPad and you're working with it, it is more convenient to, I want to take a photo and send it to somebody real quick. Let's not move to your iPhone because it has a better camera, and it is drastically better right now that people would actually do that. So if you're already on your iPad, it's way more convenient to do that. That and the fact that not everybody has an iPhone. If you have an iPad and you're doing that kind of thing, you just want to use your iPad and get it over with.
Yeah, and it's good. Yeah, it's good in a pinch.
Yeah.
It's the camera that you have with you. So it's always great that you have a better camera
exactly.
with you.
Exactly. Now,
okay, that's finally the first reasonable argument I've heard for the higher resolution camera.
Sure. I don't think it makes any sense to use it for doing Final Cut Pro level stuff. I mean, you can.
Yeah, it'll be cool that you can. That was my only point. Just the fact that, hey, you can do this. Is cool, and it's got a better camera to support it.
It's certainly not unheard of that innovations like this do cause people to find interesting uses for stuff like this.
Yeah.
So we may see something other than just the ability to use it as a convenience thing for sharing photos of whatever you're doing or something like that.
I like
that.
It for just the sheer fact of, hey, we're not going to have crappy cameras in our iPads anymore.
Yeah, exactly. What do you think about the A5X versus A6 processor stuff?
Bleh.
So, okay. That's Adam's opinion. There's a photo of an iPad 3 logic board with an A5X label on it. And we were all kind of hoping that we would see an A6 processor. And, of course, I think we've seen mentions in iOS beta code mentioning, I think they call it the it's the S5L8945X, and I think it's that those last two numbers
and the 50X,
So so the A3, right, was
it's a 40X
was the 30X. The
30X, yes, sorry.
No, A4. There was no A3. The A4 was 30X, the A5 was 40X, and so you would assume that the A6 would be a 50X, but we saw the 45X, and so that kind of led us to believe, oh, there's something different about that. And so we see this this A5X chip.
I think that's my best guess is that processor, I think, was stamped as being manufactured in like November or something.
November
like that.
14th through 20th is the week that it was created.
I buy that it could have been a prototype.
See, that's what I'm thinking.
Just have a label on it to throw everybody off.
Well, that and the fact that there are two, 9to5 Mac has found references to two different types of processors. So they saw the 45X, and they did see mention of a 50X.
Yeah.
And they both appeared at the very same time. It's just that we hadn't seen it. We only saw the 45. And so it's possible that the 45X is just something that they were using as while they were prototyping, and they're planning to go with whatever the A6 actually is going to be.
Here's the thing. I think they want to move to a quad core, but you know, anytime they're doing new processor designs and doing new manufacturing processes and stuff like that, there's always a chance that they're not going to have the processors ready. So
exactly.
You know that Apple's always planning for, okay, here's plan A. We're going to go with quad core A6, but hey, if yields don't turn out, or we can't get the factories, or we can't get the chips, we got to have a plan to release something. So we'll do an upgraded dual core, and we're going to call it the A5X or something like that. Whatever that is, you know, they're planning for all contingencies. So it's just going to be a matter of, have they been able to figure out the process for doing a quad core that has the power profile and the production yields that they can do for an iPad 3 launch. And if they don't, then they are going to have to go with some sort of revved A5, very likely.
Yeah. So do you think that what do you think is the likelihood that we'll see maybe a lower end iPad with the A5X and a higher end iPad with an A6.
I don't think Apple wants to confuse the product line like that. I've heard people say too that, you know, what about one that has the Retina display and one that doesn't? They just don't do that. Apple is going to be the same thing across the board. They haven't done that with the iPhones or the iPads. You know, they'll sell the older model. I believe that rumor that the iPad 2 will still be there as a baseline with the A5, but whatever the new iPad is, all across the line will use the same processor, the same screen, and the variables are going to be like we've always had, the memory and... Is that the only variable? Memory, storage, cellular
Wi-Fi versus
not. So yeah.
And those options are already somewhat confusing to people.
Exactly. Yeah, it's already confusing. So can you imagine the average consumer like going in like this one has an A5X and this one has an A6? What?
I can't imagine Apple doing that. They learned their lesson. Do you remember the Performa Quadra Centris days?
Yeah.
Yeah, and Apple does too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so they're not going to mix it up. Like, I really think it's going to come down to were they able to get a quad core at whatever nanometer process they want in the yields that they needed to support it,
mm-hmm.
and did the chip perform as they designed it to perform? Because sometimes, you know, they do that and they get into testing and, well, crap, it's using way too much battery and this sucks. So we got to drop down to a dual core, which is why I think we have the rumors of some people saying it's a quad core and some people saying it's a dual core, because I think Apple has probably both contingencies running.
Yeah.
And we won't know until, well, next week.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think about the rumor that we're going to see a price hike in the A3? So it looks like
that one pisses me off.
$80 for the Wi-Fi models and by $70 for the 3G models.
I think it could. This is one that I think could happen. But if it does happen, that's just total, in my opinion, arrogance on Apple's part.
I think it's a bad
idea. They'll
get
people to pay it, and they know they can, and they'll keep their margins way high, and they'll get away with it. But it's going to really piss me off because there's no need for it. So if it turns out to be true, I really hope it's not. But I have this inkling in the back of my mind that it could be. And it doesn't make sense to me with things like the Kindle. I think if Apple does that, I think what they're not realizing is that there's a whole level of consumer that looks at the price of something like the Kindle and looks at the price of the iPad and doesn't make a distinction that the technology is all that different. And they just don't realize it. And they just go, wow, that one's really expensive and this one isn't.
Right.
And I'm betting Apple is very aware of that.
And I think they are. So I kind of don't, I put like a 30% chance on the price going up, but I do think there's a small chance that Apple could pull something like that. And at that point, they are just rolling on the brand and the popularity of the iPad name to squeeze more money out of consumers. And I think that's just greedy. And I don't like to think of them doing that, but they might.
I mean, they can do anything they want.
Right.
Yeah. But I'm thinking in this case, the price hike is not going to happen.
I really hope not. It doesn't make sense. Again, it just confuses things. Apple historically has always come out with the new models at the same price with better specs. And then, you know, occasionally done the thing, hey, we got last year's model at this discounted price.
Do you think they're going to do even that with the iPad? Because with the first generation iPad, they stopped offering that when the iPad 2 came out.
I think
they did that with the iPhone also.
That's true. So I think because of
how successful the selling the iPhone 4 and the 3GS has been for them, and it gets them down at a entry level price point where they, you know, that person who's on the fence about the thing like the Kindle, can kind of go, oh well, I'll just buy this one.
But that means that they can't keep the price of the iPad 2 at $500. They need to move it down.
Right. Like, yeah. Sorry.
Right.
Yeah. Isn't that what we were talking about?
No, I mean, ostensibly that would be what we're talking about. But if in the context of having a price hike on the iPad 3, they could conceivably sell the iPad 2 at the price that they've been selling it at and have the iPad 3 at a slightly higher price.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense though.
Right.
And to back that up, I say, look at the education market and the whole new thing with Apple's textbook initiative. If you want to get iPads into schools, you need to have a better price point to ensure that you get more iPads in the schools. So if right. you have the iPad 2 available still, Wi-Fi only, 16 gigs, drop the price point. Now yep. you have something that's a lot easier for schools to be able to afford.
Yep. 16 gig, Wi-Fi only, $399.
There you go.
Only the one model.
Yeah.
White or black?
Probably black.
No, I mean, they'd keep both colors.
I don't know if they would. I mean, who cares, but I don't think they would.
True.
Yeah. So, we have a lot more to talk about, including stuff about potential iPad or Apple TV 3. But before we do that, we got to talk about our sponsor. And this week, that is Audible at audiblepodcast.com/communicators. That's where you can get a free audiobook if you haven't already signed up for Audible, which if you haven't already signed up for Audible, I don't know what you're doing because it's free. Yeah, you have to use a credit card, but you can cancel it and you don't have to pay anything. You get a free audiobook and there you go. It's your gift from us for, you know, giving it a try. And they're pretty cool. Actually, I've been a member. I looked at my account today to see when I signed up for Audible. I've been a member since 2007, and I love it. And I actually started listening to a new book, 11/22/63 by Stephen King, which is very cool.
I've been told by many people that's a really good book.
Yeah, let me. I'll get back to what that is in a second. But for those who don't already know what Audible is, it's the place to find any audiobook. Period. You're not going to find a better selection anywhere else. They have, I think, 85,000 titles in categories ranging from fiction, sci-fi, self-help, classics, business, romance, history, and just basically anything else that is a book and you think would probably have an audio version of it. They have crazy amounts of audiobooks and other stuff too. So you can get, when you're browsing through your books or through the books on the site, you actually are able to get a several minute preview of any book that you are interested in. And I do this a lot. So maybe I'm not sure about the book, or maybe I'm just not sure about the person reading it. So I can get a little sample, because sometimes there are different readers, different versions, and there's an abridged and an unabridged version of the book. So you can get several minute previews for that. Books can be purchased individually. So if you go to audible.com and you look around, you can find books that like are $60 or more if you buy them individually and you don't have an Audible account. But the cool thing about it, if you actually subscribe to the listener program where you get like 1, 2, or 3 credits per month, I don't think I've ever seen a book that's more than one credit. So you can get a $60 audiobook for one credit. And if you go into the iTunes store and you try and find 11/22/63, I think it's like $70 or something like that.
Yeah, it's
holy
crazy.
Crap.
Yeah, yeah. I don't understand why someone would pay for that, you know? And the reason I really like Audible is because it's really the same reason I like podcasts, is because maybe I'm driving in the car, I'm doing something where I can't keep my attention on text. Maybe I'm cooking or cleaning or whatever. I don't particularly like to exercise with like spoken word, but if that's your thing, you can do that too. It's great for any of that type of downtime. And obviously you're listening to a podcast, so you totally understand that already. And of course you can listen to your computer, iOS device, whatever. And the great thing is on your iPhone or iPad or whatever, you can sync through iTunes if you want. But the way that I've started doing it is I use the Audible podcast or Audible app. And the great thing about that is because you can re-download any Audible book that you ever purchased, you can re-download it at any time. You can do that with the app. So you have your full library right there, and I can just download a book and it starts downloading, and as it's downloading, once it gets to a certain point, it will say, hey, you can start listening to this right now. You don't have to wait for the entire thing to download. So you can listen to all of your books through that application, and it has a bunch of really great features like skipping forward and back and chapters and yada yada, but you know, you can get access to your entire library from that. So that's really great. Now, 1122.63 is my pick. So this is what I'm recommending to whoever gets a free book from Audible, but you can get whatever you want with the audiblepodcast.com/communicators URL. This book is about a guy who finds a time portal to the past, to 1958. I think it's like November in 1958. And he wants to stop the Kennedy assassination. But the thing is, that portal only goes back to 1958. So he has to stick around for 5 years and like kind of make a life for himself and do a bunch of stuff and figure out the portal and yada yada. I haven't really gotten too far into it yet, but that's the gist of the book. And it's, so far it's pretty cool. So if you're not sure what book you would want to get, you can get 1122.63. But if you're thinking about getting another one, you know, take your time, browse around the Audible website before you decide to go to that URL and get your free trial, then download your book and enjoy it. It's awesome.
I would recommend any of the stuff by Neil Gaiman that is read by Neil Gaiman.
Yeah, I haven't actually.
Ooh, I bet there. That's good.
Yep. The Graveyard book is particularly excellent.
Cool. I have a bunch of credits I need to use up, so I need to do that. But yeah, so check it out. Get a free audiobook. If you haven't already done it, just do it. Come on. It helps the podcast. And, you know, Audible is an awesome service anyway, so why not? audiblepodcast.com/communicators, and we thank Audible for their support of the podcast. And with that, part numbers suggest the possibility or an imminent release of a new Apple TV, which would kind of make sense coming alongside an iPad 3, right? Because basically, if you look at the guts of the Apple TV 2, it's essentially an iPad without the screen.
Well, okay, that's not why it makes sense to me. Here's why it makes sense to me. If the iPad 3 has a higher resolution display and then supports 1080p video, mm-hmm. it makes sense for the Apple TV to support that as well, so that when you're doing AirPlay streaming, you can display the video at the highest possible resolution.
Oh, yeah. That's okay, so wait. Can the Apple TV display 1080p video?
Right now, it right displays now? 720p.
So it downscales yes. video that you send it if it's 1080p?
Right.
Okay, what about the iPad? Will it play it at all?
I believe it's... Oh, crap. Now I can't remember for sure.
Yeah, it's hard to remember. I think, and I even think the Apple TV 2 can be, if it's hacked, can, I think it technically can play 1080p video. How well it can do it is a whole nother question.
Yeah, because I have some 1080p video that I just recently downloaded, and so it's playing through Air Video on my iPad, but maybe it's just downscaling it.
But yeah, I had read that, you know, there's a hack. If you hack it, I think you can get it to play 1080p video, but out of the box, Apple doesn't have it, has it outputting 720.
Now, what is the, I don't understand why that restriction would be there. Is it for performance?
Yes.
Okay, now.
Performance and reliability, which Apple does a lot. I mean, they downclock processors. They do a lot of things to get better battery life, better performance. So while it can do it, Apple probably wasn't happy with the reliability of that with the current chipsets. So you know, they do that sort of thing.
Okay,
I'm just speculating here, obviously.
All right, now if I'm playing 1080p video though on my iPad, which I am right now, and no hacks or anything, I'm just using Air Video. It must be downscaling or downsampling it, doing something like that in order mm-hmm. to make it play. But don't you think that would use up more processor?
I don't know. I don't know enough about how that whole process works to speak intelligently on that.
Maybe it's just because I'm playing it through Air Video. Maybe if I sync it through iTunes, it wouldn't work as well. I don't know. I haven't played around with it enough. Oh, you know what? I think happened. So I've tried playing some of this 1080p video on the Apple TV right from the Apple TV menu instead of streaming it through Air Video. And I think it took a long, long time, and maybe it didn't even play. And maybe I ended up getting frustrated and just playing it with my iPad through Air Video streaming. Maybe that, I don't know. If people know how that works, you can just
I don't even own a 1080p set to play any of it on anyway.
I have 720p set. So, but yeah, so if you know the distinction between all this stuff and how they do that on the iOS devices, send an audio comment describing that for us. You can either give us a call at 202-642-6667, or you can email an audio comment, feedback@wehavecommunicators.com. That'd be awesome.
I'm hopefully in the next month or so going to be doing a show with a guy who has a whole entire Apple-based setup for playing 1080p video in his house, so I could ask him these questions.
Cool. Yeah,
using Mac Minis and X-Serves and like this whole
He has an X-Serve?
Huh?
He has an X-Serve?
Yeah, all the videos stored.
I've always wanted an X-Serve, one of those big RAID thingies.
Yeah, I think it's like in his garage, and it's like a central server, and then he can pipe 1080p video to Mac Minis all over his house. So sounds like an awesome setup. I'm going to interview him and hopefully find out how he does all of it and what the limitations are. And so it should be good. So stay tuned for that. Cool. MacCast.com.
Yeah. So in addition to those part numbers, Apple has also been not shipping Apple TV 2s to various retailers, and the availability of the Apple TVs has gone down even at the retail stores, the Apple retail stores. And it says on the page for availability, it's available March 8th, which of course is the day after the announcement of whatever.
What's available?
Apple TV. You look at the availability for an Apple TV at certain locations, certain Apple retail stores,
At Apple retail stores. I was going to say, because I had checked online just a couple days ago, and they were still saying they were shipping
in 24 hours
for delivery. Yeah, in 24 hours for delivery by like March 2nd. If I ordered one yesterday, I think it was. So
we forgot to cover the 25 billion downloads of the App Store. I think it's worth mentioning. I don't know if by the time this podcast comes out, if it's already going to hit 25 billion, but they're going to give away a bunch of stuff. For whoever.
The 10 grand iTunes card, right? Which is what they always do.
It's an App Store gift card. You're never going to, wow. You should spread that love, whoever gets that. Because you're not going to be able to buy enough apps to use.
I assume you could use it for music too, right?
It says App Store.
Is it going to be restricted to apps?
It says App Store.
I bet you can use it for music also.
Oh, yeah, hopefully.
The one thing I found out is you can't use like Apple does distinguish the retail gift store cards versus the iTunes.
Yes, they do.
Which is annoying to me.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is I bet you could use the retail card to go into a retail store and buy an iTunes gift card.
I think they wouldn't let you do that.
they don't let you do that.
They don't?
I'm pretty sure they don't.
See, I got an Apple gift card, and I wanted to use it for buying movies because I rent movies occasionally, and I realized it gets expensive over time, and I was like, oh, I could just do this, but found out I couldn't use my retail card. So I've held on to it, and I'm going to use it to help subsidize my iPad 3, but it would have been nice to have those things go back and forth. They don't. And I thought that was going to be my cool trick, but you're telling me that won't work, huh?
No, I don't think so.
I'm pretty sure it doesn't. They're pretty hardcore about segregating how those cards are used.
Yeah. So right now it's at 24,896,892,000,000, yada, yada, yada. It's going fast. I'm not sure if this can't be a real count, but it's just it's flying by on the Apple homepage.
Now, open up.
Are you loading the Apple homepage right now, Michael?
Yeah, why?
open it in another browser. No, you and have the two browsers side by side and look at the numbers.
Is that my connection that's cruddy?
Are you saying another browser or like just another window? Another window, it's different. So
yeah, it doesn't matter if it's another window or another browser. And it's probably just you, Adam, because okay, you and Michael sound awesome to me.
Okay, good. Something's wrong with my connection.
That direct pipe that you have to Apple.
That's probably it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, Adam, what do you think about the iPhone user who was awarded $850 in small claims court?
He's my hero.
Yeah.
That dude's awesome.
So it was over the AT&T throttling for unlimited data users.
So. Yeah. I tweeted out that guy rocks. You know, I don't know. I'm so peeved at AT&T for just being stupid.
Do you? I kind of have a feeling that if enough people make a stink about it, they're going to backpedal. What do you think?
No.
No.
I believe Adam is correct.
Yeah.
Not enough people are going to make a stink out of it.
Hmm. Well, wouldn't it be cool? That'd be really cool if that happened.
It would be cool.
Yeah. So, but I believe there's an article somewhere about ideas for taking your case to small claims court.
Mac Tech did a article right after this came out about what you need to do if you want to take AT&T to small claims court.
Right.
That's pretty standard. Most contracts that you're going to get from companies for services have a clause in there that if you have a problem, that you're going to go through their own arbitration or small claims court at most.
Right.
Yeah, I'll throw that article into the show notes.
And I'll just say this. I'm not saying that anybody should and everybody should do this, go file a small claims thing, but just hypothetically, wouldn't it be really cool if everybody who got throttled did?
Yeah.
I think it would make a significant impact.
Well, you know, I'm significantly... Yes,
not that I'm advising people should do that, because I'm not.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean...
But if you did, wow.
That would be kind of cool.
Well, I got to say that I'm significantly pissed about the whole thing. So if it does impact me, and I'm sure it will at some point, if that does happen, I'll certainly consider it. Does it cost something to go to small claims?
It depends on where you are, how much it costs. But you'll have to pay filing fees.
Yeah,
right.
So assume $50. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I bet you could get them to, you know, the AT&T if they lost the case to pay it.
Well, sure. Well, when you do your filing, you include as part of what you get if you win, compensation for your own legal expenses, which includes your filing fees. Since it's a small claims court thing, you're probably not going to be able to take an attorney with you, so you won't be able to recoup those costs. But
okay, so
yeah, the what was I going to say about that? There's one more thing I wanted to add. What I loved about the case was just how the judge completely saw through. I have to imagine saw through like the counter argument that AT&T tried to make. So, you know, the guy rightly pointed out the fact that he was paying $30 a month for unlimited data, and he got throttled at, I think, a gig and a half, or yeah, 1.5 gigabits. So half of what other users who are on the $30 a month, 3 gigabyte capped plan get. And the guy, like in court, literally argued that, well, if a customer's data use is negatively impacting the network, then we have the right to cancel their contract or to throttle them. But by saying, so in one breath, AT&T is saying, well, it's fine if you want to pay $30 a month, you can use 3 gigs and that's not going to impact our network because that's what we give you for $30 a month, 3 gigs. And then they're turning around in the other breath and going, but this guy was using a gig and a half and he was negatively affecting the network, so we had to throttle him.
Like, and really? You just have to love a judge that can look at that and go, really, AT&T? Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So speaking of crazy AT&T ideas. Do you hear about them working on a system to allow app developers to pay for customers' data usage?
What?
Have you heard about that? It's they say that it's akin to toll-free 800 numbers. So the idea would be if an app developer knew that they were going to use a lot of data, or a customer would use a lot of data.
So like Skype, or if you had a video streaming app or something like that?
Right.
Okay. I'm with you.
So the app developer would somehow subsidize the data usage. They're working on a way for developers to do that.
Here's the thing. How about if I subsidize the data usage with like the monthly data usage fee that I pay you every month?
Yeah.
Yeah. And see, now I need to file for workman's comp again because, oh man, this time I saw my medulla oblongata. This eye rolling thing is really going to mess up my vision, isn't it?
Probably. You need those muscles, I think.
I'm pretty sure I do. But mm-hmm. What the hell? I mean, really, what is up with cell carriers? They're coming up with these what appear to me to be insane schemes to try and make people pay even more.
For less.
Yeah.
For less and less. Yeah. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, SMS messages, that's the biggest scam in the world because it's not even like there's overhead. That's just data that goes in the regular header packets that are being sent anyhow.
Well, that's why they have to make it up in other places now, especially with like iMessage. I love the little blue color on my phone. It's my favorite color right now.
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah, that's the frack you AT&T color.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I love it when a new friend gets an iPhone and I go into their contact into the conversation that I've had with them, and then the little button turns blue.
Then you're like, this is all free.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Do you hear about Apple possibly miniaturizing the dock connector for future iPhones?
Yep.
Yeah. Again, that's another one of those where I think there's a possibility because Apple has a track record of just suddenly deciding, oh, we're going to change this. And were we talking about this, Jeff, at one point? You know, it was they've done it with displays a ton, right? We had ADC or what do we have before that? You know, we've had DVI, VGA, ADC. Like they'll change a video connector without blinking.
Right.
So they haven't done it. I hope they don't do it because there's lots of accessories and things out there that rely on that 30-pin dock connector. And for me, the idea of having to carry around some sort of dongle weird thing is just awful.
Yeah. Well,
if they need the space, then they may have to do it if they're trying to, you know, make things thinner or smaller. So it may be kind of forced, but
I mean, it's going to happen at some point because things change.
And I think that the fact that they added in Wi-Fi syncing makes a lot of people's reliance on the dock connector less.
Well, I use the dock connector a ton for speaker docks.
Right. That's where those are the guys that are going to get really messed up by it because they'll have to either, you know, build adapters or some sort of adapter thing for their customers. Yeah, those are the people that are going to get really messed up. But, you know, as far as like syncing, I think less and less people are relying on dock cables for syncing. So that change really wouldn't, for most users, impact them too much. And, you know, Apple might argue too that they added stereo Bluetooth and you have also AirPlay for speakers. So there's a lot of wireless connectivity options.
But that doesn't
take away the need for the dock connector.
Yeah, and granted, I do use AirPlay half the time that I'm playing audio from a speaker dock because for example, the speaker dock that I have on top of my fridge, yeah, it has a spot where I can plug in my iPhone, but I plug in my AirPort Express instead so I can use AirPlay, but the dock in my bathroom and the docks elsewhere, you know, I still use that, but
Yeah, but that's why I buy that one, that Apple might change that connector if it's just, you know, hey, we need something smaller so that we can fit more components and bigger battery more and more people are using wireless technologies to do the kinds of things that we used the dock connector for in the past. So I think they could get away with it and justify it. It's just like we're moving forward and they have a history of doing that thing, that sort of thing. So I kind of buy that one.
Yeah. The only issue I have with Wi-Fi sync is that it takes forever.
Yeah. I hate it too. But
yeah.
Again, that's never stopped Apple before. Yeah. They're going to go, look.
I'm not saying it's out of the realm of possibilities. Yeah, but it kind of will suck when it does happen.
You know, I hope that when it does happen, Apple doesn't follow the path that Palm followed with their handheld dock connectors, because they went through so many different versions of their dock connectors. And it was like every time you'd buy a new Palm handheld, you had to dump all of your accessories because it was a different dock connector again. And that just, I mean, that really sucked ass. So hopefully Apple won't do that. And when they do change, it'll be like it is right now, where they've had the same dock connector for multiple years. Yeah. And then the new dock connector they'll have for multiple years.
I mean, the dock connector, I'm kind of surprised that it's lasted as long as it has and has as much capability as it does. You know, whoever designed that initially did a really good job, because not only can you get your data in and out, you got your power, audio, video, high definition video, all that stuff.
Yeah, and remember, that dock connector goes back to early model iPods.
Yeah, 2003. Because
you had a dock connector off of a FireWire cable originally.
Yeah. Yep, it used to be just straight FireWire.
Ah, the good old days.
But I'm guessing they would probably go to something that's like mini DisplayPort, or Thunderbolt rather, right?
Well, not on the iPod itself or the iPhone itself.
But yeah, would it be, I think that might be even bigger. It'd have to be some kind of maybe Thunderbolt protocol, but maybe not the same shape.
Well, Thunderbolt is just an interface. So you can connect pretty much anything to it as long as you have the right adapter. So right now there's no reason why you couldn't get a dock connector that plugs directly into your Thunderbolt port and just have a talk USB if you want.
Right. Well, I guess what I'm saying is they need to have something that is akin to Thunderbolt, in that it is just a direct line to the board on the phone that can do anything, and it's a different shape.
Yeah, that would be okay.
Yeah.
As long as you could still run power through it, because you have to charge and you want to charge and do data through a single cable.
Right. Can you do power with, you can't do power on Thunderbolt, right?
Yes, you can.
Oh, you can now.
Right
when,
now.
Once they switch to optic, then no.
Although they're working out something on the optical side where there'd still be a piece of copper, I think, next to the optical carry power.
Okay.
We can't send power through optics yet?
No.
Through the sky.
Yes, Michael, you can send laser beams through optics when it charges your iPod.
Why can't we just convert the laser beams to power?
When you figure out the efficient way to convert light into power, you're going to be doing very well.
You won't
yourself.
Be doing podcasts anymore.
Solar panels?
I said efficient.
Oh.
So solar panels are great, and they've gotten more and more efficient, but definitely not the most efficient way to generate power.
Yeah,
sorry, it's just not.
Yeah, as I recall, and I know we have listeners that will correct me or at least give us the exact numbers. I don't think solar panels are at 20% efficient yet.
Hmm. I don't know. I wonder.
You can generate power, but it takes a lot. It takes a lot of panels and a lot of light to generate. Power.
Right, and the fact that we have this massive star so close, we're able to get away with incredibly inefficient solar power right now. But boy, wouldn't it be nice if we had like 80% efficient solar power?
Yeah, I mean, talk to anybody who's tried one of those. I mean, they have all those solar power things that you can solar power your iPhone, but they really don't do much.
No, you need to have the ones that I've played with. You need to have direct sunlight and a lot of patience.
That sounds nice. All right. So, unless there's anything else you guys want to talk about, I think it's time for our iDevice
picks. Do you have Chomp, the Chomp Buy thing on your thing?
No.
I have to run pretty quick, but just real quickly, you know what I'm talking about? Apple buying Chomp.
I do. I didn't ever like Chomp. Isn't that the
it
one?
Sucks. Where That's what I want to point out. Like I got really pissed when I saw this story. So, you know, a common complaint about the just real quick, a common complaint about the iTunes Store and specifically apps is discovering apps. Like it's getting harder and harder to find like good apps on the App Store. And so a lot of people are trying to figure this out. And the common complaint with Apple, of course, is that they kind of had to shoehorn apps into iTunes and iTunes is broken. And we all have these theories. There's rumors right now that, you know, Apple's getting ready to completely revamp iTunes, which would be awesome, right? And specifically the iTunes Store area to kind of deal with some of this. Well, they bought this app sort of, I don't know, it's like search engine is I think what they call it. Like an app search engine that's supposed to help you find apps, and it's called Chomp, and I think the report was they bought it for $50 million.
Yeah, $50 million.
I don't know if that's been confirmed or not.
I thought it was like social based too. Like the rankings are based on like Twitter.
It's chomp.com, and they have an app for the iPhone. So I had never, honestly, I had never even heard of these guys before. So it just kind of came out of the blue. And so I'm like, well, okay, I'll try it. Because all the sites are being, oh, this is awesome because Chomp is awesome and helps you find apps and it's really good. And if Apple can roll this technology into the iTunes Store, it's going to make it so much better. And I went and tried it out, and it's not any better than anything else. And it seems like it's totally gamed, in my opinion. And, you know, I did things like, I thought, okay, let me try something very simple. I'm going to search for drawing to find a really good drawing app for my iPad or my iPhone.
Yeah.
It did not come back with one of the good drawing apps. They were like these kitschy, like drawing games for the iPhone and stuff like I had never heard of. And they could be fine, good applications, but definitely not what I would think someone who is looking for drawing would be looking for. I don't think you'd be looking for like Pictionary style games. Maybe, maybe not. If I type drawing games, that might be more appropriate.
Yeah.
But I didn't play a ton with it, but you know, they kind of got categories. They do track like trending stuff that's on sale. But again, it was real weird apps that I had never heard of, even in those categories. It's like, really? None of the stuff that people tell me is cool or good, which is what I think most people want. They want to know, okay, I'm looking for something in this category. What are the best apps? And I didn't seem to get those kinds of results from it. So.
Yeah, I mean, so if they call it a search engine, it fails on that.
Yeah.
They say there's like social ratings in there too, but it says, okay, so for Sketchbook Mobile X, it says there's 28,000 ratings and it has 4.5 hearts. And there are a bunch of little reviews from people who I think you review it on Twitter. I think you have to send out a tweet in order to review it or something like that. I don't know. It's very seemingly arbitrary.
I mean, just for example, so searching for drawing comes up with draw something free,
mm-hmm.
draw something, Trip Fest 2, mm-hmm. Doodle Buddy, Trace, Line Rider, Sketchbook Mobile X. I guess that counts,
that's
right?
That's a legit one, yeah.
Yeah. But that's the fourth or fifth one. And Glowing Color. Don't know.
Yeah.
SpongeBob, Marbles, Draw/Slasher, Dark Ninja.
Yeah, so clearly it fails on the whole search engine thing.
But, okay, the big thing for me out of this is that Apple was willing to spend, what was it, $50 million to buy Chomp?
Right.
Because their search system for the App Store is so bad that they were willing to pay $50 million to buy a crap gamed search system.
Well, but the thing is the other thing I read is that behind Chomp is a supposedly sophisticated analytics system that's analyzing what people are searching for and how they're searching and what they're kind of talking about. And I half wonder if that's maybe more what Apple was after than the front end search recommendation stuff. So I don't know. But I don't know. I just wasn't impressed. So if somebody can tell me what I'm missing with Chomp,
I would like to hear that too. But I mean, yeah, that alone means that it's broken. If you can't figure out what it is and why it's good, then what the heck?
Yeah.
But all the sites that we were reporting on this was like, this is the most awesome thing ever. And I'm like, did you guys go out and try and use it? Or are you just speculating because what Apple has now is so bad that anything that they do, like you were saying, kind of saying, Jeff, is going to make it better.
Yeah.
All right. So iDevice picks. Adam, woo-hoo, you go first.
All right. What was I going to pick? Oh, man. I am going to pick something that is a little kind of odd. It's a simple little app. It's free. It just came out. It's movie related, and I generally don't like to do the kind of movie promo stuff. So this is one of those movie promo apps, but it just kind of made me laugh, and it was kind of funny. Have you guys seen the Lorax app?
No.
So I'm half picking it because it's Dr. Seuss, and half because the Lorax is my favorite Dr. Seuss story. I'm kind of iffy about the film, you know.
Well, I think you should be more than iffy. I think you should be flat out pissed off.
Okay. I was going to give it the benefit of the doubt, but is it out? I don't even know if it's out yet.
It's not out yet, but everything I've seen, it's Lorax in name only.
Yeah, that's what it seems like to me too. But the app is fun. So it's free. You can download it. So what it does is it has two features. One, you can take photos with your iPhone and then put Lorax mustaches on people.
Okay.
And, you know, so you do the whole pinch to scale and rotate and you can save them. I think there might be a fee if you want to like share them as postcards, but you don't need to do that. Just play around. So there's that part. But then the other part that's kind of cooler is one called Stash Yourself. Or is it the Lorax Stash? I'm probably getting them mixed up. Yeah, the Lorax Stash. And so what it does is it kind of puts up a Lorax mustache and a mouth on the phone, and you hold the phone in front of your face, and so it looks like you've got a Lorax mustache, and then you start talking, and the mouth starts moving. So it's listening to it, so the mouth opens. So
that's like a little fun.
Lorax face on your face. So it's kind of funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's all it does. It's a simple app, but made me laugh. It's Lorax Dr. Seuss themed, and so I'll pick it for that.
Cool. Jeff, what is your pick?
All right. My pick comes with a caveat, which is that while it's cool, it's not all the way there yet.
So I know what it is, but continue.
Me too.
Yeah, Photoshop Touch.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool because this is the first iPad app that actually gives me the type of control over images that I've always wanted to have. Not the thing with being able to apply filters and stuff like Snapseed, which is a fantastic application. But what I want to do on an iPad is to be able to take an image and do things like cut the background out, put layers in, put parts of multiple images together, and there have not been any apps until Photoshop Touch that actually really let you do that. So it's really cool in that respect. It's not quite there because the performance, I think, is lacking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, really lacking. If iPads had fans in them, when you launch Photoshop Touch, they would go to full blast and stay that way until you were done using the app. And if you're not using a stylus, the app is, in my opinion, essentially unusable because of where the menus sit and the gestures, everything else you need to do to actually edit and manipulate an image. If you don't have a stylus, your hand is simply in the way. But that said, I can actually perform basic image editing functions that I need to do on my iPad. And previously, the only way I could do that was on my MacBook Pro.
Yeah, I would agree with that assessment. The one thing that I hope gets improved beyond the performance would be if they could somehow do something to make the masking tools a little more smart.
Refined, yes.
Just smart. Like, because on an iPad, it's just really hard to like do masking, like to find those edges and stuff like that. So you kind of need like assistance from the device, but this may be a performance, you know, issue for them as well. So maybe the iPad 3 fixes that. I don't know. And then my only other complaint about it was the UI. I don't like the just the UI elements, how they're kind of presented, like the palettes and stuff like that. They're this just kind of flat, weird thing, and not very, they didn't come up as very intuitive to me. Like even like entering in, you know, like an actual value, they have these sliders and you can enter in the value, but even like the little pop-up that comes up, it feels very webby, like almost like it's a CSS HTML web interface as opposed to a native interface.
Yes. And so my assumption is that they actually did what you should never do, in my opinion, for an app that requires a lot of horsepower. I'm betting they wrote it in Flash and used their Flash to iOS conversion.
That's what it feels like, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. Yeah. And the tutorials, which I think are absolutely essential. If you're going to play with Photoshop Touch, you have to go through every single tutorial. Otherwise, you won't be able to easily figure out what the tools are and how to use them. The problem is that at like the very first tutorial, it gives you an arrow pointing to what it wants you to click on in the tools, and it's not the tool they want you to click on.
Yeah, it's actually not pointing to the tool. It's just pointing to the menu bar where all of the tools are, which took me a while to figure out.
Yeah, it took me a long time to figure that out. And it's a problem because the other places where the arrows point, because of the way the interface is built, you're pointing at the actual thing that you're supposed to click on or tap on. So that was confusing. The wording that they use in some of the tutorials, very vague and confusing, like telling you to tap on something, but they've never told you what it is that you're actually tapping on. And or saying tap okay, but there's no okay to tap anywhere. Things like that.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, despite all of the bagging that I'm doing on Photoshop Touch right now, in the grand scheme of things, I'm really glad this application is out because it gets me one step closer to being able to do the day-to-day things that I have to make happen without having to take my MacBook Pro or my MacBook Air with me everywhere I go.
Cool. So it's $10. It's Adobe Photoshop Touch. And that is Jeff's pick. My pick this week is the F-Sim Space Shuttle Flight Simulator. I believe it's just called F-Sim Shuttle. But it is a Space Shuttle Flight Simulator. It doesn't have... It's for the landing portion, basically the only portion that people actually have control over, because the rest is computer driven. But
which is probably a good idea because getting into orbit means let me sit on top of a bomb.
Yeah.
And I say that in a totally kick-ass awesome way. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah, totally. So what you get to do, you get to land the space shuttle. You get to do the full approach or you can do a final approach. So it's either you're just doing a straight line or you're doing the part where, depending on the direction from which you're approaching the runway, you do a huge loop or do a slight curve or whatever. So you can do Kennedy Space Center or Edwards Air Force Base. You can choose the runway. The angle of approach, day or night, clear, overcast, visibility you can tweak. You can change the winds, gusts, turbulence, temperature, pressure, you know, all the flight simulator type stuff. And you can also have failures built in there. I think there's an option to do like a random set of failures, maybe, you know, like hydraulics or no guidance or yada, yada. It's really fun. And so I say it's really fun. I think it's more fun to screw with it.
I was going to say, how many space shuttles have you now destroyed?
Lots, many. And I love the space shuttle. It's one of my favorite things, but it's really fun to just see how many loops you can make it to. I did not know that thing could do some loops, man. Some barrel rolls and stuff. It's pretty cool.
You know, assuming you lived through it, barrel roll in a space shuttle, oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and the cool thing is you have a full HUD, so you can see how many Gs you're pulling, how fast you're going. you know, and you get a bunch of different views, and so you, you know, I totally just like nose down, and so immediately G load limit, you know, whatever, who cares, big deal. Time to do a barrel roll. Ooh, wow, whoa. Yeah, I'm doing some crazy tricks right now. You know, seeing where you can land it pretty much anywhere. They say you need a super flat runway. I don't think so. I think they're fooling themselves that you need a special spot to land the space shuttle, because I've landed it in water, and it seems to it seems to react just like ground. So I don't know what they're talking about.
Well, there you go.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, and it lets you do tons of fun stuff, such as, you know, messing with the gear and doing the parachute and all that stuff, and you can take a lot of control over it, or you can do pretty much automated for yourself, and it's really fun. And I think, I mean, I should probably know how much it is instead of actually just playing it while I talk about it. It is $4, and it's a universal application, so it works on your iPhone and on your iPad, and of course you control it with the accelerometer. And just FYI, for anybody concerned about me crashing the space shuttle, it does not do any sort of animation for the crash. It just kind of jams itself in the ground and says, you're done.
Which is probably exactly how it would happen in real life.
Yeah. It just kind of fizzles out of existence, and then it resets back to where it was when you started.
Nice.
Yep. So, with that, you can find all of our iPhone picks and show notes at wehavecommunicators.com. You can review the show on iTunes. We love that. Feedback at wehavecommunicators.com is the email address. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Of course, don't forget to get your free audio book from Audible at audiblepodcast.com/communicators. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com. He's at Jay Gamet on Twitter. Zazzle.com/Jay Gamet is where you can find the wonderful drawings he's made on various things, hats, shirts, mugs, and the We Have Communicators mug is there too.
And everything tastes better in that mug.
It sure does. Adam Christensen is at the MattCast, mattcast.com. He's at MattCast on Twitter, and member.mattcast.com is where you can find the member version of the MattCast.
Yes, it is. I just did a show on Safari.
Ooh.
Or Spotlight, excuse me, Spotlight Tricks. Oh.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Can I?
Yeah. Can I tell you a cool one that I discovered? I'll give everybody a freebie on this one.
All right.
So if you do a spotlight search through the menu bar thing in Lion, you know how you get those cool little previews when you hover over stuff.
Mm-hmm.
If you hold down the command and option keys when you hover over that, down at the bottom of the preview window for a file, it will show you the file path.
Oh.
You get this little pop-up that comes up. I had no idea that existed.
Wow. Do you know how to get it to show me more than one result for applications when I search in Spotlight? Because I'm always searching for either transmit or transmission, and whatever app it shows me is the app I'm not looking for.
Yeah. If you figure that one out, let me know. That's a good question.
Because, I mean, I don't think I search for anything but applications with Spotlight. And it,
yeah, the order, because I installed Parallels, and there's some Windows apps that come up like when I'm trying to launch Terminal. Okay. Hyper Terminal for Windows XP comes up as the first result instead of Terminal in the top hit, and I don't know why.
That's not right.
And I wish I could control that. I think it's an alphabetical thing is what it is, but it's messed up.
Yeah. Huh. All right. I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, at Little Reviews. I do reviews of various things. And I'm going to go to a wine tasting this weekend, so I might review some wine.
Cool. Sorry, on the thing, I just thought of this on the spotlight. Are you trying to find only one versus the other?
Because
the one thing you could do is add the app to the ignore list, the one that you don't want to show up.
No. I'm either searching for transmission or transmit. I search for both of them, and whenever I'm looking for one, I get the other.
Yeah. Okay. Never mind.
Just because Spotlight likes to toy with me. Yeah. So I'm using, I think it's Alfred.
Yes. That's awesome.
Yeah. See, now that seems to make sense. oh, look, there are all the ones that start with T-R-A-N. That makes sense. That, and it's really easy to open Wikipedia pages with that. So if I type W and I type in Saturn V, I go right to the Saturn V Wikipedia page. Ta-da!
Fun.
Cool. Yep. All right.
All right. All right. So with that, we'll see you next time on We Have Communicators.
An iPod. An iPod. Internet. How are we going to communicate this? The stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? So what are we going to do?